Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Explanation of the Vedic Path, Text Number 26. Evam Vyavasitam Kechid. Avigaya Kubudaya. Phalashrutim Kushumitam. Navedagya Vadantihi. Evam Yavasitam Kechid. Avigaya Kubudaya. Phala Shrutim Kushumitam. Navedagya Vadantihi. Evam. In this way. Yavasitam. The actual conclusion. Kechit. Some people. Avigyaya. Not understanding. Kubudaya. Having perverted intelligence. Phalashrutim. The scriptural statements. Promising material rewards. Kushumitam, flowery. Do not. Vedagya, those in full knowledge of the Vedas. Vadanti, speak. He, indeed. Persons with perverted intelligence do not understand this actual purpose of Vedic knowledge, and instead propagate as the highest Vedic truth the flowery statements of the Vedas that promise material rewards. Those in actual knowledge of the Vedas never speak in that way. The followers of the Kama Mimamsa philosophy declare that there is no eternal kingdom of God beyond this universe, and that one should therefore become a professional performer of Vedic rituals in order to keep oneself in a material heavenly planet. As explained by the Lord to Sri Uddhava in a previous chapter, there is no actual happiness in the material world, since one will inevitably rotate throughout the various planetary environments stretching from heaven to hell, and thus always be disturbed within the material atmosphere. Although the doctor may give a child candy-covered medicine, one who urges the child to eat the candy and throw away the medicine is certainly a great fool. In the same way, the flowery statements of the Vedas describing heavenly enjoyment do not award the real fruit of Vedic knowledge, but merely supply decorative blossoms of sense gratification. As stated in the Vedas, Rig Veda 1.22.20, Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Sarayaha. Even the demigods, who are permanent residents of heaven, are always looking to the eternal abode of the Supreme Lord. Foolish people who admire the standard of living in material heaven should therefore know that the demigods themselves are devotees of the Supreme Lord. One should not become a bogus propagator of so-called Vedic knowledge, but should take the Krishna consciousness and make a genuine solution to the problem of progressing in life. Om Ajnana Tinirandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Tena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Svabhadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Gurim Yat Kripata Mahamande Sri Gurum Dhinatarinam. Evam vyavasitam kechid avigyaya kubudaya So this verse is describing those who do not understand the actual conclusions of the Vedas. Vyavasitam. Vyavasitam. That's the actual conclusion. Kubudaya. Why? Don't they understand? Kubudaya. Kubudi means they've got poor intelligence, poor discrimination. They don't have any. They don't have the capacity to discriminate. Now, what is the actual purpose of Vedic knowledge? Who can say? Well, this refers... Huh? Oh, thank you, sir. Well, it's referring to a statement previous. Persons with perverted intelligence do not understand this actual purpose of Vedic knowledge. So, prior to this, Krishna has actually stated what the real purpose of Vedic knowledge is. Well, first of all, they have proper intelligence, right? They're not kubudi, but they're subudi. Huh? Kubudi and subudi. So let's see if we can find that particular statement. It's in a previous, might even be in a previous chapter he's referring to. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, the actual purpose of Vedic knowledge, it's not actually referred to in this section, but what Krishna is discussing here with Uddhava is the application of the Vedas in the Vedic literature. There are many statements which encourage worship of the demigods. Performance of sacrifice, giving in charity, building wells, building dharmasalas, you know, performing pious activities. And the goal of performing those pious activities is so that one will progress in material life, basically, so that one will be elevated as a result of one's pious activities to a higher status of existence. And of course, the highest status of existence in the material world is to be elevated to the planets of the demigods. And as we've been discussing recently at Krishna Fest, this is the symptoms of people in the mode of goodness. Those in the mode of goodness are gradually elevated to the higher planetary systems, live with the sages and the rishis and the devatas, exalted living entities. And so, you know, if we look at the evolution of the living being, if we look at the evolution of the soul, then the whole idea is to gradually move a person's consciousness upwards. By the performance of pious activities, one will gradually be elevated. But there is a real problem with this understanding of the Vedic system. And that is that one, even though one may rise to the platform of goodness, you'll still be caught or trapped in material existence. There are a number of problems. The actual motivation for performing these sacrifices and other pious activities is really to enjoy sense gratification. That's one problem. And of course, the prime motivator for sense gratification is actually the mode of passion. And as we read in the Bhagavad Gita, the modes of material nature compete with each other for supremacy. And the end result is that one just stays in the material world. And basically one has to, even if one is elevated to the planets of the demigods, you may live for a really long period of time. But ultimately, even those situations are temporary, albeit they last for a very, very long period of time, but they have their limitations, their asat. And Krishna mentions, and it's mentioned in the purport here, Abrahma Bhavana Loka Puna Avijana Ujuna. Wherever you go, if you go to the highest planetary system or the lowest planetary system, or you remain in the middle planetary systems, in all of those situations one has to basically suffer. And Prabhupada gives the example of a prisoner. You know, we're still trapped by the laws of material nature. You may be a first class prisoner. You know, you've got your latest flat screen TV with all of the channels. You could be watching the soccer, and have amenities, nice carpet on the floor, etc. But still, you're a prisoner. You're still in jail. There's no actual freedom, as opposed to somebody who's living in a dirty dungeon. There's still the laws of material nature still work on the demigods. They may have a higher quality, so-called quality of existence, but they still have to suffer the same things as those in the lower species of life. Jamna, Mrityu, Sada, Vyadhi. Prabhupada says, these are the, and the Vedas say, these are the real problems of existence. And the solution to those problems is not to try to make a comfortable situation for ourselves in the material world. And this is the karma mimamsa philosophy, basically, that by pious deeds, by good deeds, by worship of the demigods, we can gradually be elevated to a position of permanent happiness. But that really is an illusion, even for the demigods. We see in all of the stories of the Bhagavatam, the demigods are worried They're in anxiety because they're worried about the demons coming and taking their position. Right? Even the demigods have difficulty. And there's various descriptions of battles between the demons and the demigods, and then, you know, the example of the demigods offending their guru, Brihaspati, and then Bali Maharaj, wasn't it? Was able to take over their position. Hiranyakashipu was another example, terrorizing everybody. So even the demigods, you know, even though the demigods have a much more elevated and apparently more comfortable situation, still they have their anxieties, they have their worries, and of course they also have to face the inevitable, you know, as sure as death. So the Vedic rituals that encourage worship of the demigods give promises of long periods of enjoyment in the material world are not meant as the panacea. They're not meant as the ultimate destination or the ultimate cure for material existence. They're simply to encourage people to engage in activities that are ultimately beneficial for themselves and will elevate them, but that's to keep them basically out of the lower levels or the lower species of existence, so that at least in the elevated realms of human life and beyond, one at least is given an opportunity to associate with the devotees, to hear the Vedas, to engage in pious activities, and by that association get an opportunity ultimately to associate with devotees and be in a state of consciousness where one can actually understand the instructions, the real purport of the Vedas. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Vidais cha savayaraham eva vidyo vidanta krit vedavid eva jaham. But Krishna explains the real purpose of studying the Vedas is actually to know me, to know Krishna. And basically to get out of the material world. And it's interesting in the purport here, it explains that. Even the Vedas describe the demigods worshipping the Lord. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Saraya. This is a verse that we recite when we do the Archman, the pujaris. This is one of the first verses that is chanted. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Sarayo Dvi Chakravartam Tad Vipaso Vipanna Gol Jagravansa Savindate. And basically it means that everybody, what the speaker of the demigods, but everybody should look to the realm, the paramam padam, right? The supreme abode. What's the characteristics of the supreme abode? No birth, no death, no old age, no disease. That's the supreme abode. Sada pasyanti sarayaha. Sarayaha means the demigods, the asuras, as opposed to the asuras, the demons. The demigods are the opposite. So the demigods are actually, and you know, it's described how at the end of the creation, all of those who reside on the planet of Lord Brahma, who've been worshipping the Lord, as Lord Brahma does, You know, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a description when Gopa Kumar travels for, and he goes all throughout the universe looking for the best devotee, and he comes to Lord Brahma's planet, and everybody's worshipping Lord Vishnu. So those who live on Brahma's planet and worship the Lord, then basically they're devotees, which is the purpose of, you know, the whole purpose of studying the Vedas is to become a devotee. And when the universal affairs are wound up, then the residents of the Lord Brahma's planet, they go back to the spiritual world. That's the real purpose of being elevated, not being elevated to the planet of Lord Brahma and then just having a whole bunch of sense gratification. The whole idea is go to Lord Brahma's planet and become a devotee. So, you know, the real purpose of the Vedas is to not create a perfect situation in the material world, because that's not possible. And so therefore, Nivrut, sit down, please. Good boy. Yeah, that's very good. I think toys like that shouldn't be in the Bhagavatam class. What do you think? They'll be a distraction. Right? Because he's going to want it. That's what's going to happen. Mark my words. Whose toys are they? Okay. Put them in your pocket. Okay? Good boy. That's very good. And you're all sitting very nicely. Very good. Hey, Bob. You're not playing on the front lawn, are you? Huh? Or pulling up Prabhu's sticks in the garden? Doing anything like that?
No.
Keep an eye. Everybody, keep an eye on these guys for the next couple of weeks. Next couple of lifetimes. Huh? So, you know, the message of the Vedas is to get out of the material world, not stay in the material world and try to enjoy it. And so, you know, there's this misreading of these sections, the Kama Kandiya sections of the Vedas. And this is where this Kama Mimamsa philosophy comes from. Although it's a bit, you know, in the Kali Yuga it's a bit hard to believe this kind of a philosophy, that we can actually, by our karma, create a situation where we can always be happy. You know, because living in Kali Yuga, basically, we're experiencing much, much more misery than we are happiness. Most of us. Right? Anybody here who experiences more happiness than distress in life? Okay. So, you know, we would think, how is this possible that anybody could fall for such a philosophy? You know, all you have to do is turn on the 6 o'clock news. Right. And there's always some disaster. There's always a disaster happening. So, and especially for the devotees, you know, for us, when we look at the Kama Mimamsa philosophy, then we think, well, how could anybody believe this? How could anybody follow this kind of a philosophy? And of course, that's, you know, that's one of the advantages of having a spiritual master who actually understands the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to become, you know, basically become Krishna conscious and get out of the material world. Yet there are sections of the Vedas that actually encourage jagyas and sacrifices and performance of pious activities to elevate oneself to the higher planetary systems. And because they don't have discrimination, they're not actually able to see. You know, the material world is a place of temporality. It's temporary. It doesn't last. It's actually a place of suffering. And because they only understand existence in terms of material, a material conception of life, then they can easily be attracted to these ritualistic sections of the Vedas and create a philosophy around simply performing these pious activities to elevate oneself to a situation where one can stay permanently happy in the material world. For most of us, you know, that's a rather foreign concept, permanently happy in the material world. It just doesn't compute for the devotees, and also just from, as a result of our general experience. And as it's mentioned in the purport, actually there's no real happiness in the material world. And of course that's Krishna's instruction in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna explained, you know, those who are bewildered by the flowery words of the Vedas engage in these pious activities. And are attracted to basically staying in a material world. But devotees are not attracted to that conception. They understand the example of the demigods is not to become... It is not an advantage to be elevated to the platform of the demigods so that one can enjoy material existence. But one should take the example of the demigods, like Lord Brahma, they're actually devotees. So wherever we are, it doesn't matter where we are within the creation. And in fact, this is one of the advantages of devotional service. It's the advantage of actually taking birth now. There's a distinct, even though we're living in a situation where there's distress and difficulties and a lot of unhappiness, especially in the Kali. Kali adosha nidhe rajan. It's described by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. Actually, Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. But it has one good quality. Mahangunaha has one good quality. Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Rajet. That we get an opportunity to achieve or to attain the actual purpose of the Vedas, even in a situation which is very distressing and confusing and a time of great difficulty. You know, we expend intense endeavour just to be able to maintain ourselves. Right? We go to work, we work hard, we endeavour to the utmost, but then, you know, we get such a measly return. Right? So, you know, material efforts are very dissatisfying and discouraging and leave a distaste, very distasteful results of activities performed. Whereas on the other hand, if we take to devotional service, then we can be elevated to the highest platform of spiritual realization and actually achieve the real purpose of the Vedas, that is to get out of the material world altogether. There is a higher abode. The highest abode is not the realm of the demigods, although that is very elevated, but even the demigods have their limitations. So the message is basically one shouldn't be distracted or deviated by these instructions in the Vedas, which encourage good karma. You know, that is for less intelligent, materialistically minded people. And we see that. you know, we shouldn't discourage people necessarily from performing these activities. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that one shouldn't disturb the minds of the ignorant, but one should encourage them in acts of devotion. So we encourage people to come to the temple. Even if they're coming, you know, many people come to the temple and they bow down before Radha Vallabha, but they're not actually interested in serving the deities. Even sometimes we're like this too. You know, and they put their $2 in the hundi and then they pray, you know, bow down and pray. And who knows what they're asking for. Right? And they don't take advantage of the opportunity that's afforded them by associating with the devotees. Right? There's one fellow who comes in every morning and he comes and bows down to Prabhupada, then out the door and gone again. Right? You know the person I mean. Right? And I sometimes wonder, what is he doing? Doesn't associate with the devotees at all. That's the real, you know, the real purpose of going to a temple is to get the association of the devotees and to get an opportunity to perform devotional service. That's the real purpose. But of course they're coming to the temple, you know, here's my $2. Please let me be successful in my business or whatever. Now, we know the foolishness of that kind of behaviour. But we wouldn't discourage a person from coming to the temple. Because eventually, you know, by tasting the prasadam, by hearing the chanting, by associating with the devotees, eventually a person will come to a realization of the futility of material existence. But while a person is completely absorbed in those pursuits, the devotees encourage them, yes, come and pray to Krishna. Right? We don't discourage people from, but rather we encourage them in positive activities. Right? Just like children, we encourage them in positive behaviour so that they don't destroy the garden. Is that right? Is that right, Aditya? Yeah? Although it is our responsibility as parents and as brahmanas, teachers, you know, to find positive engagements for them. If you neglect your children, then off they'll go and rip everything up. Huh? Without proper guidance. So people need good guidance and supervision. But if they're not inclined, because basically people are absorbed, people are very absorbed in their material pursuits. And in fact, you know, renunciation and detachment, it scares them. Right? You know, when parents find out about the fact that their children have become associated with the Hare Krishna movement, and they get, oh no, he's going to become a sannyasi or a brahmachari. Going to give up everything, going to give up material pursuits altogether and become a performer of austerities. So while there's that absorption in material pursuits, one is encouraged to perform these pious activities. The end result being create an environment, create a situation where they can come to the association of the devotees, and then by the association of the devotees they can learn about devotional service. And that's what's mentioned in the purport here, that, you know, the worshippers of the demigods should understand that the demigods themselves are worshipping Krishna. And so that's the example that should be followed. The Vedic process is not to pursue sense gratification. But the Vedic process is to pursue a proper understanding of things as they are. That's why there's this kubuddhi. You know, they have an avigya. Avigya means they don't have the proper understanding of things. Kubuddhi means lacking discrimination. Which we can get in the association of the devotees, we can actually learn the proper path and we can learn the proper means of analysis and discrimination and seeing things as they really are. And inquire, you know, why am I here? What is my actual purpose? Because, you know, if we look at the material existence, we see that nothing is permanent. It's hard to believe that people could pursue, you know, perfection in the material world when our experience is, if we just look around us, how faulty everything is. At least that's my understanding of things. And certainly Kali Yuga is like that. Everything is faulty. So for us, in one sense, even in the Kali Yuga, we may not be very elevated or exalted as a result of our current situation. But the beauty of this particular environment or situation that we're living in now is that because things are acutely distressful, then if a person understands and experiences, and that's not very difficult to do, the futility of material existence, then they can easily value and appreciate the association of the devotees and the process of devotional service. That's the real, you know, the real perfection, is to pursue perfection in Krishna consciousness, even though our material endeavours may reduce or be minimised. The end result is, by taking shelter of Krishna, one is successful spiritually, and you know, we also experience that we also prosper materially. We get enough to eat, we have clothes to wear, we have a roof over our head, you know, we know what we're able to understand, the actual purpose of existence. So, as I mentioned here, one should not become a bogus propagator of so-called Vedic knowledge, but one should take the Krishna consciousness and make a genuine solution to the problems of progressing in life. That's real progress. Real progress is to become fixed up in our devotional service and be able to see, as a result of that, one's actually able to see things as they are. So does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Yes. Yes.
But on the other hand, it's taken here along the lines of that mode of movement is a sort of entrapment.
Yeah.
So there are two conflicting statements.
Yeah.
So how do you reconcile these?
Well, if you look at the activities of devotional service, you'll see that from the material, and from a material analysis, the activities are actually performed in the mode of goodness. They actually elevate and bring a person to the mode of goodness. Because in the mode of goodness, one is able to cultivate knowledge. Mode of passion is symptomized by hankering, intense desires and longing, intense endeavor, right? And ultimately, all of that intense endeavor, hankering, basically hankering and then lamenting. It's a mode of passion. Mode of ignorance is just degrading. You know, animal existence. Degradation. It's the opposite of the mode of goodness. And the mode of passion is basically creates distress. It ends up in distress. So in order to cultivate a proper understanding of things, one should situate oneself primarily in the mode of goodness. But the purpose is not to be in the mode of goodness. The purpose is to perform devotional service. That's the real. And so we were discussing this the other day. What is it? You know, it's the mode of goodness is cultivated to execute devotional service. not to just create the mode of goodness per se in and of itself. The mode of goodness doesn't immediately equate to devotional service, but devotional service means mode of goodness. Right? So, if you look at all of the activities that Rupa Goswami has prescribed for us in the nectar of devotion, right, all of those activities basically put us in the mode of goodness. Rise early in the morning, take a bath, do the puja, chant Hare Krishna. All of those things are all activities in the mode of goodness. Study the Vedas. Be regulated in one's lifestyle. Be detached. All activities of goodness. But is the purpose to become situated in the mode of goodness? No. The purpose is to be engaged in devotional service. Now, automatically, the engagement in devotional service will elevate us to that mode of goodness. Right? But the purpose is not to be in the mode of goodness, it's to be a devotee. That's the real purpose. So, you know, we can take, you know, now ordinarily the material energy is degrading. Ordinarily it degrades us. Right? But we can take that energy and use it in such a way so that actually it elevates us and puts us into the transcendental, onto the transcendental realm or transcendental platform. So you see in the beginning of the 16th chapter, you see a description of a whole range of activities. Ambayam, Satvasamsud here, etc. Starts off with that. And then it's described, they're all of the Daivi Sampat. You know, I don't know how many, is it 26 in that chapter? 26 qualities, basically. And they're basically the qualities of goodness. Huh? And then after that there's the Asuri Sampat. Then there's a description of all the qualities of the demons, which is basically pushed by the mode of passion. Right? So, and Krishna mentions, he says, these qualities are conducive to knowledge. Right? Worship of the spiritual master is one of those qualities. So basically, you know, they're activities of goodness, but the purpose of performing those activities is to bring us to the point of performing devotional service. So that way we can understand the mode of goodness is like a springboard to get us out of the material world and into the spiritual world. But in and of itself, if we just cultivate the mode of goodness in and of itself, that doesn't mean ipso facto that we become a devotee. You had your hand up? No, you were just fighting with him, huh? Raising your hand up for help.
I've been thinking that heavenly goodness is only for pious people and people in goodness. How come we got demons in
heaven? That's a good question. That's because the demons, they want to take over the heavenly planets by their materialistic endeavors. And I think that, you know, the message is basically that, and Prabhupada gives this example, you know, you can't stay in the heavenly planets unless you're actually qualified, right? And so, you know, by material efforts you may get there, and we see that. Who's an example of that? Well, Bali Maharaj is an example. He was able to conquer the demigods for some time, but he wasn't able to stay there permanently because he didn't have the qualification. And you know, it illustrates the, you know, this battle, I guess, between, you know, the forces of good and the forces of evil. Right? There's always that tension. And it's also good for the demigods, you know, to be kept on their toes as well. You have to be good to stay in the heavenly planets. You have to be qualified to stay there. And we see sometimes, and you know, really, by the way, Gita mentions this, that there's the modes of material nature compete with each other. And one becomes prominent and then defeat, you know, the goodness actually gets defeated from time to time. We experience that in ourselves. Huh? One day we're good, then the next day we're not so good. Huh? We think, oh, where did that come from? I thought I was making advancement in Krishna consciousness, and now I wake up this morning and I feel like a demon. Huh? So those pastimes teach us a number of things, you know, that even you are a demigod, that's only a temporary situation, and you can easily become a demon tomorrow. I've heard a description of how, you know, in the Satya Yuga, then how is it that the demons and the devotees live in separate planets, is it? Then in the next, they live in separate, different countries. Then the next is they live in different families. Then in Kali Yuga, they live in the, you know, they're in the same person. Something like that. So we see that, you know, that there's this tension even between the demons and the suras, and you look at the demons of the caliber of Kamsa and Trinavata, Putana, and all that, you know, they are very powerful personalities. So there's always this dynamic of, you know, the mode of passion competing with the mode of goodness, and the mode of goodness competing with the mode of ignorance with passion. To teach us that the material world is actually not a really pleasant place. It's a place of, what is it? Samasrita ye pada palava pravam mahat padam punya yaso marare. You know, the material world is an ocean of struggle, basically. Even for the demigods. But for the devotees, you know, even though material existence is a struggle, for the devotees, what is it? Bhavam buddhiya vatsa padam param padam 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 yadvipadam natesham. For the devotees who take shelter of Murari, Krishna, the killer of the Mura demon, then the vast ocean of material existence shrinks into the size of the water contained in the footprint of a calf. It's a nice verse from the Bhagavad Gita. You know, the demigods are so elevated and advanced and superior that when Lord Brahma sees Krishna playing as a cowherd boy, he can't even understand that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not necessarily an advantage to be a demigod. Huh? There's a problem with the mode of, you know, the mode of goodness makes one self-satisfied and has this feeling of happiness, and so he thinks that everything's okay. So the demigods tend to think, yeah, we're okay. So the demons are there just to remind them, everything's not okay, watch out, we're going to try and get you.
I'm just wondering whether Vedas, does he Varnashram Dharma at all or no? No question. They don't even touch
the Vedas?
Varnashram.
Well, I think they do. Different sections of the Vedas deal with different topics, right? Where is the Varnashram system mentioned in the Vedas? Where is the Varnashram system mentioned in the Vedas? Krishna mentions it in the Bhagavad Gita. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, so it must be prescribed. Isn't in the Manu Samhita there are the rules and regulations are given for the different Varnas and Ashrams? Isn't it? I've never studied the Manu Samhita, but as I understand it, there are strict, you know, even in this section of the Bhagavatam, we're saying earlier on, Krishna is explaining, here's the duties of a sannyasi, here's the duties of a vanaprastha, here's the duties of a grihastha, here's the duties of a brahmachari. Right? Isn't it? We've just studied a lot of this. Yes. No, definitely. And Prabhupada talks about Varnashram extensively. Because Krishna mentions it. Which chapter of the Bhagavad Gita does Krishna talk about Varna and Ashram? Yeah. Fourth chapter, yes. Why was the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita transmitted or transferred through the parampara system? Anybody know the answer to that question? Why was the parampara established? What was it for? Krishna mentions right at the beginning of the fourth chapter. Yes, so the Sankhya kings could understand it in the proper perspective and use that information to manage and order and structure society so that people will be gradually elevated. So the Varnashram system basically takes the natural characteristics and propensities of people and then engages it in positive activities which encourage devotional service. That's the basic idea. So the Varna and Ashram system seems to be all-pervading, at least as far as I can understand, at least in the literature that we study. It's a continuous thing. I think the ladies' Bhakti Shastri class is discussing the Varna Ashram today. Certainly Chintaripa has been studying it for the last 2 days. So how do we implement Varna and Ashram in our society? That's another topic. If you want to find out, you can go to the Bhakti Shastri class. But basically, you know, it's to order society. Even these ritualistic systems of worship that are given in the Vedas are meant to order and structure society so that gradually they'll be elevated. That's the whole idea. The ultimate elevation is to come to Krishna consciousness. But the interesting thing is that you don't have to be in the mode of goodness to become a devotee. Right? Otherwise, how come we're here? Unless, I mean, maybe I should only speak for myself. You know, how many of us were all perfectly situated in the mode of goodness, worshipping the demigods every day, performing sacrifices, right? How many of us performed sacrifices every day before we became a devotee? Agnihotra Jagya, right? Anybody? No. But now we perform sacrifice every day, don't we? Jagyai Shankitan Praye Yujantihi Sumedataha. We sit down and we chant Hare Krishna. That's the sacrifice. So now, you know, we become perfect brahmanas because every day we perform sacrifice. We don't think of it like that, because, you know, after performing our brahminical activities, then we hop in the train or the bus or hop in our car and drive off to work and go and do some ugra karma. So we don't think of ourselves as yajnik brahmanas. But actually, the devotees, we perform yajna every day. You know, we don't light a fire and, you know, and chant all the mantras and stuff. But the simple act of sitting down and chanting, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's the yajna. So automatically we, you know, Prabhupada says, actually the devotees surpass the brahmanas. Right? We surpass the position of the brahmana. But most of our activities, the performance of the yajna, worship of the deity, you know, offering our cooking and offering food and so forth, and all of those activities, if you look at them and analyze them, basically they're all in the mode of goodness. Right? So we rise early in the morning, perform our mode of goodness activities, and then in the daytime we exercise our real, you know, the real person comes out and off we go to work. And then actually, you know, if you analyse it, we're probably mostly sudras, if that's the case. Right? Off to work in the call centre. Mm-hmm. Right? Off to work at Coles. Isn't it? Or off to work at, I don't know, where do you go to work, Brahmakund? What's the name of your establishment?
Datacom.
Right? Cody? Is it the same place? No, different place. Same thing. Different location. Now, what is that? What is that activity? What is that? What is that activity? If we looked at it in terms of vana and ashram, what is it? Not ashram, but in terms of vana, what kind of activity is it? Is it brahminical? What is it? Huh? Kshatriya? Huh? Vaishya. Bit of Vaishya in there. Right? If they didn't pay us, we wouldn't do it. Right? But of course, sudra. Is it a sudra activity? What do you reckon? Working for IT, you know, we've been, you know, IT were demigods a few years ago. They got lots of money, right? But now they're more or less like, you know, they're the blue collar worker of the white collar workers. Huh? The IT wallers are the servants of everybody else, because we're all connected by computers. We're all connected by this, you know, the internet, basically. The internet and, yeah, basically the internet. But our activities in the morning, you know, when we get up in the morning, we're actually, it's like we're brahmanas, isn't it? Rise early, clean your teeth, do all of those things, and just go and perform yajna. We perform a sacrifice every morning. So it's interesting that, you know, the activities that we engage in are basically brahminical. Or we convert our activities basically to brahminical activities. Even if we've come from a mode of ignorance, many of us haven't come only from the mode of ignorance, we're mixed, mode of ignorance, mode of passion. And maybe there's a little bit of goodness. You know, I thought that because I grew my own vegetables and, you know, I was living in the country and self-sustainability, I thought, oh yeah, I'm in the mode of goodness. Before I met the devotees, I'm in the mode of goodness. And when I met the devotees, I realised, I'm in the mode of ignorance. There's more ignorance than there is goodness. But it doesn't matter. If one gets the this is why the association of the devotees is so important. If one gets the association of the devotees, then automatically one can be bordered to not just goodness, but the sudasattva. That means activities of goodness, but engaged in devotional service. And so for those activities, that's not even karma. A devotee engaged in devotional service isn't even in the material world. It looks like they're in the material world, but actually they're not even in the material world. They're in Vaikuntha. You know, so there's that quotation where Prabhupada mentions that his disciples look like, you know, previously they were hippies and in a mode of ignorance, but now when they're dressed with tilak and dhoti and with kanti mala, now they look like residents of Vaikuntha. So we were residents of the material world, but in the association of devotees we are elevated to the residential facilities of Vaikuntha. Amazing. Without any qualification whatsoever, somehow or other Krishna put us in a situation where we got the association of the devotees and an opportunity for being elevated. Okay. Just one thing, if we can keep the kids off the front lawn for a few weeks. You know, we've now, according to the turf experts, and let's see how expert they really are, but according to them, we should be able to have a lawn. You know, we've been trying to grow a lawn in the front yard for like years and never ever been really successful, especially with the drought. But according to the turf specialists, and these are the guys who are selling it to you, of course, but we should have a sustainable lawn, but we've got to keep people off the lawn, especially the younger, because you know they'll see that and they'll go, wow, far out, cricket pitch, soccer pitch, you know, a place to perform our Ramayana pastimes. You know, Prabhu does stuff to the garden. He puts these stakes in the garden, so these guys come along and rip them out, and then want to start fighting with each other. They think, "Wow, this is fantastic, huh? Perfect." And we've just cleared out the back, you know, and it's all been leveled and perfect place for warfare. The battlefield of Kurukshetra has just been created for us. We've got our weapons in the garden, we just have to pull them out of the ground and then off we go. Yoo-hoo! Charge! But watch out for Prabhu. He's now, you know, Prabhu puts his heart and soul into the garden, so now the kids are the enemies. So you've got to patrol. So Prabhu's going to be a bit like a security guard. Let's see. Let's see if it's successful or not. We have to let the turf get established. And you know, the real test will be Janmashtami. Well, we stick everything on top of it and then walk on top of the garden and, you know, be interesting to see what happens. But anyway, we'll give it a try. Okay, Kandarashimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.